This episode has been brought to you by the Rampage Network, a webcomics hosting and community site at rampagenetwork.com. For over 7 years, the Rampage Network has brought to you almost 100 different webcomics and programming for people to enjoy. Webcomics such as Supernormal Step, Red Moon Rising, Garanos, Alan, Astray 3, Lols, Blip, Commissioned, Toilet Genie, Plan B, and much more, all at rampagenetwork.com.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
It's Sunday, December 11th, 2011, and this is episode 46 of the Webcomic Beacon newscast with Alex Hibberling from alexsguide.net.
Hello.
Eric Kimball from BladeBunny.com.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
And I'm Thomas Revor from 910CMX.com. Our top story today. Garib Shamus, the former CEO of Wizard World, Wizard Magazine, and all the rest of their little things, has been accused of trying to get a webcomic artist fired from his day job. Apparently, over at The Gutters, which is one of the webcomics created by Ryan Somer and the gang over at Blind Ferret, did a comic talking about how Garib has gone through and pretty much destroyed the whole wizard industry. And he didn't like it. He had shown up at the artist's place of employment and tried to get the guy fired. Now, they had gone, I have to hand it to Blind Ferret, because they had gone through taking down the strip and replaced it with an exact similar strip done by standard Blind Ferret artist Lars D'Souza. Now, this is a great notice as to some of the insanity that can go through within the webcomic world. Eric, you're the one who found this article. Why don't you give us a little more about it? And Eric's gone. Alex, what did you...
I think I'm back.
Well, Alex, you're here. I think Eric is gone bye-bye. But he'll be back. Alex, I know you've seen the story. There he is.
Sorry about that.
Live shows for everybody. Eric, you're the one who found the story. Why don't you give us a little bit more about the whole Blind Ferret and Garib Shamus story?
Well, I mean, you pretty much covered it. It was a situation where they printed a pretty scathing criticism, an apt criticism, but a scathing one of this guy. He resigned his post at Wizard World, and then on his way out, he stopped by the place of business of the artist, and the artist is unnamed, and basically said, you got to get rid of this guy. And so the artist requested Blind Ferret take down the thing. Now, I mean, of all the people to pick on, this Blind Ferret was not the company to go after, because they have staff and artists. So all they had to do was go to another staff artist, said, "Hey, draw it," and it's drawn. It would have been a very effective attack against an independent cartoonist. I mean, if this was done by just an artist-writer team, like most webcomics are, or even an independent artist, this would have really, really scared them off the web. But he picked the wrong target to go after, and he's now brought a lot more attention to this article and basically his poor business practices. So it sort of blew up in his face. This has been referred to as the Streisand effect.
Yeah, I was going to point out, it was a little bit of a Streisand effect.
Yep. In that he was trying to cover this up, and everyone has been talking about it this week. And he's just not a good guy. You know, he made his money during the collector's boom, where everyone thought comics were incredibly valuable. And he printed a magazine that talked about how valuable comics were, and that's how he made his money. Now that people don't think comics are incredibly valuable, he can't make money. And it's been flailing about, and he's done a couple of poor business practices, such as he canceled Wizard Magazine, but didn't return the subscription money to all of the subscribers, saying that they will get a membership to an equally valuable magazine, and never gave it to them. He opened up Wizard World Digital, accepted subscriptions on the digital version, and then shut that down and didn't return any money. So,
and on the flip side, I will say that Blind Ferret has handled this terrifically. The artist in question, again unnamed, just like most of the artists there, are work for hire. So they get the comic, they do it, and they get paid for it. That's it. They really don't have it. It's all from Ryan Somer, who is the writer for this comic. And in fact, he went through and basically said, you know, if you're going to go after somebody, go after me. The artists have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, Somer's definitely not somebody who's going to take this lying down, even if it's, you know, just him doing a project. I mean, the fact that Blind Ferret does have a stable of artists, I think, you know, even if they didn't, I don't think that would really change how Somer would respond, and he's certainly not going to take anything like this lying down. So.
Now, we have asked Blind Ferret to someone from Blind Ferret to come on the show, and they have respectfully declined on this because they basically have said, we said what we wanted to say on this, and we don't really want to go into muckraking any further. Which makes for a boring show if you don't want to do muckraking. And we sent off a letter to Garib Sheamus as well, but apparently, well, his head's somewhere where it shouldn't be, and I hope it's nice, warm, and dark there. But from the comedy of that, let's go ahead. We've got a couple of not-so-funny stories. One is Webcomic Direct, and the other one isn't, and that is over at DUMM Comics, one of their people over there, Ricky Garduno, has passed away at the age of 35. There wasn't that much information about it, and there is a article over on Fleen.com, which is talking a little bit about it as well.
Ricky was really the anchor of DUMM Comics. His comic was the most present and the most popular. So it's sort of a hit for them, and he was very, very active in the web for a while, and then he, withdrew. Obviously something was going on. We don't know really what, but he had quite a following, and a lot of people liked him, and he was integral to the DUMM Comic Collective, so...
Right. From the article over on Fleen, from Gary Tyrell, he talks about, Garduno just kind of drifting away back in October, which makes me think that that he knew something was up back then.
Yeah.
I mean, October wasn't that long ago. And it's always a tragedy to see somebody that young, less that liked, passing away.
And speaking of people who were liked and passed away?
Yep.
What's the next story, Tom?
I know how to do this stuff. But this is someone who definitely wasn't that young, and that is Jerry Robinson has also passed away. Most people will not recognize that name right off the bat. However, they definitely will recognize one of his creations. Jerry Robinson is the man who created the Joker. He was 17 years old when Bob Kane recruited him to serve as the inker for Batman, and Robinson was instrumental in including such characters as the Joker, Alfred Pennyworth, the famous butler of Batman, and Robin. So, God rest him.
What a rap sheet.
Yeah, I mean, he left comics for a while to study journalism, do some political cartoons and other stuff, but he returned to do museum shows and things like that back in the 70s. It's And he's something else that I didn't know that I truly applaud him for, not just his creations, but he also worked with Neil Adams to help get Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster the recognition and compensation that they so richly deserved. So, Jerry Robinson, dead at age 89. God rest you. But let's go on to something a little more interesting to talk about. It's so rare to see a controversy come up from David Willis of Short Pact. But he had done a recent comic over in Short Pact talking about the, quote, sexiness of characters, where he feels that apparently women want metrosexual characters and that there is a sexual discrepancy in the way that comics portray men and portray women. So, excuse me. So let's go ahead and start this off with you, Alex. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about the comic, since you're our token female on the staff.
Let me get it loaded up here. My connection is being a little slow. Basically, the character whose name escapes me at the moment, it's actually been an ongoing storyline, I believe, over the last few comics about, you know, talking to this, you know, guy in this comic shop. And the guy first brings up that men are not, you know, men are also idealized and sexualized in comic books. And, you know, it's not just women that are being, you know, idealized and whatnot. And first off, she points out that, you know, it's a case of false equivalence there, because the way that men are idealized is actually, it's a male power fantasy and not actually targeted towards things that appeal to women, whereas the women in comics are the sort of male sexual fantasy, so to speak. And so then she proceeds to draw a picture of Batman, basically, but changes some aspects of his body and presentation to sort of match what her personal preferences would be. So he's got a leaner physique for dexterity and whatnot, and he's got these big eyes with sparkly highlights in them, as well as rosy cheeks and kissable lips. And in the last panel, she shows the drawing to the guy, and he says, "That art makes me feel uncomfortable." And she responds, "Welcome to the background radiation of my life."
Now, I mean, Willis likes to paint with a very broad brush. And believe me, I've got plenty of ex-girlfriends that definitely want the bad boy more than they do the metrosexual type.
Yeah, I honestly don't think that Willis is trying to imply that all women want this sort of character, though.
No, I mean, that's sort of the thing. The point is not so much that this is what all women want. Now, there are, I mean, if you want to look at what is considered sexy for women, Twilight. I mean, that has a whole bunch of different types of men, all sort of designed for, attractiveness to females. And there is a lot of it, but comic books do not have that archetype. They don't, I mean, and I put an article underneath about gorillas in comic books. And it was found very early on, putting a gorilla in a comic book increases sales. And it's because comic books are male power fantasies, and the power fantasy is not to appear sexy, it's to appear like a gorilla, powerful. And it's one of those things where, yes, they're idealized in certain ways, but they're not idealized in a sexual way for women. And I think that is a very good point, that being muscle bound is not a sexual way for women most of the time. I mean, it takes all types, and obviously, you know, you can say, well, the idealization of women in comic books is not my particular type of woman, and I like whatever. But it's still, you're talking in generalities.
And I mean, again, that's where he gets a lot of stuff, because even though, like I said, he paints with a bit of a broad brush, and it is definitely taken as, from some of the articles I've seen, as this is what all women want. Twilight's a perfect example. You've got, on one hand, the vampire character, and yes, folks, I have never seen a Twilight movie. Who is the sparkly, glowy, pretty boy.
Brooding and mysterious.
Yeah, with the soft eyes. You know, and then on the flip side, you've got the beefcake, the werewolf, shark boy.
But at the same time, he's not the Incredible Hulk. I mean, you know, which is the comic book archetype. The comic book archetype goes even beyond that, where, you know, these are hulking, muscle-bound giants. And that's not a Twilight. That's not in Twilight. And that's not in a lot of these items. I mean, you could make a case for Fabio.
See, I was thinking more on people like professional wrestlers or Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime. I mean, it wasn't just men who were fantasizing about that.
I would argue that a lot of professional wrestlers were not female fantasies. I mean, yet again, you can say there were some, but if we're talking just archetypes, and we're talking about archetypes with the most mass appeal, wrestling was not targeted to women. Wrestling was yet again another male power fantasy, and those archetypes were not targeted to women. I mean, I will concede that there were plenty of women who liked that.
Right. And again, you're absolutely right. It's not the target audience. But it is definitely, you know, even though you don't hit the target, you're hitting something. And there were plenty of people who were going for it, both male and female.
Yeah, but I mean, you could say that, then you could say, why are there no fat women in comics? Because there are plenty of men who find Rubenesque women attractive.
See, and it's funny you should mention that, because that's one of that's one of my big bugaboos about the New 52 from DC Comics, because they had a very powerful character in there, Amanda Waller. Bingo.
Yes.
Who was a older, heavyset black woman who got through by sheer force of personality and will. I mean, and at times being an absolute adults, watch your kids, who got through by being an absolute bitch. But it was a strong character. Since the reboot, and they echoed this in the Green Lantern movie, Amanda Waller has been turned into a late 20s, early 30s, slim, well-built black woman.
Yeah, she had some serious lipo or something.
And it's just,
and she,
like,
smiles now, which apparently she did not do before.
No, no.
She's not a very smiley character.
It's taking away some of the things in there, that some of the characters that they had in there, just like with Barbara Gordon, who is now back on her legs, no longer Oracle, she's back to being Batgirl, which eliminated a major character who, for the disabled, or for the handicapped, well, whatever the politically correct term is nowadays.
Disabled, yeah. School.
Yeah. I mean, the main argument, and I think this argument has a lot of validity to it, is that the comic books have been narrowed down to two archetypes. You have all male characters are muscle-bound hulks. All female characters are hypersexualized supermodels. And that is not, on average, a fantasy for women. That is, I mean, and you can always make the argument there is someone somewhere that find that attractive, but that is not, on average, a female.
But I also, I mean, I take exception to that, because let's go back to before the Image Comics era. I mean, I mentioned Neil Adams earlier. His Batman wasn't the muscle-bound Frank Miller Batman. He was, you know, not an acrobat, but definitely not muscle-bound. He was ripped.
If you go back, comics have been narrowing and narrowing and narrowing down.
Right.
archetypes.
I put a lot of it toward, I mean, I say the Image era, to where Image Comics had two things for them. They had men who with overinflated physiques whose six-pack had nine muscles in it, and women who had a bust line which, you know, they couldn't even touch their toes when they bent over.
No, and I mean, it's silly, and it's saying that that is the men are idolized. It's the men are idealized for young boys.
For some, this is one of the ones we're going to go round and round on. I mean, because it is, you have to take a look at the characterization. I mean, giving Batman soft eyes when the whole thing is anger and angst.
Well, Tom, you're getting too caught up in the details here.
Well, let's see. I you know, this, what Willis drew was manga.
Yeah.
That's a manga Batman, manga character that he drew there. And if that was the case, and that is, Alex, let's get a female viewpoint from it, because it does seem like a lot of the manga characters out there are drawn that way, the soft look, the pretty boy look.
Well, yeah, it depends on which genres of manga you're actually looking at, because there are different you know, terms for manga that market that are marketed to different age groups, such as seinen is manga that is marketed to adult males, you know, 25 and up, and shonen is for males, you know, 5 to 15. And so there's all sorts of different styles of manga, and the ones that have been most imported are the ones are actually like shoujo, which are for the teenage girls sort of things. And so that is where that archetype of the huge-eyed pretty boy, that's how it just became so ubiquitous here in the Western market. But, you know, if you look at a lot of different manga that are made for lots of different audiences, then you will see the differences. You know, it's not all like that. Just like all American comics aren't necessarily the Batmans and the muscle-bound Hulks and whatnot, you just have to dig a little deeper into the actual scene to find it. But unfortunately, that first impression is oftentimes what, you know, a casual observer will see, and if they are not into that, then they're not really going to want to look any farther.
Exactly. And let me leave this off for all the women who like the type of character that Willis drew for that panel. Take a look at Nightwing. But on to our next story. One of the possible, and let's say probable, success stories in the webcomics world, and that is the creator of the webcomic Cyanide and Happiness is to be working on a Comedy Central show on the most inaccurately named cable network that I've ever heard of. The character, like I said, the people who did that, who do Cyanide and Happiness, is getting a show.
They're going to be working on Cyanide and Happiness shorts.
Yes.
Yep. Very exciting.
It's not just them. It's this is a variety show. This is going to be like a Saturday Night Live type show.
Tracy Ullman show?
Tracy Ullman show, where the birth of the Simpsons came in. So, yeah, they're going to do a shorts in the same style on that show. I don't see Cyanide and Happiness getting its own series, but it's an interesting step forward, and we see more and more of these each week of popular webcomic creators being tapped for writing the gigs.
And not just popular ones. There have been some that weren't as popular, but definitely creative, that are being tapped for some of the stuff. Yeah, I mean, if we go over in the print world, take a look at, and I'm going to mangle the name, Jonin, you know, the creator of Invader Zim.
Jonin Vasquez.
Jonin Vasquez, who got to start off in a very, somewhat moderately popular among a certain sect, but that was, what was it, Bob the Angry Milkman or something like that? Bob the Angry Flower.
Bob the Angry Flower, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But enough to show my ignorance in some of this stuff. And our next story, webcomics and cooking. Who would have ever thought that this would have an interesting mix? But there is a book coming out called Webcomics, What's Cooking? Which is exactly that. It's
actually
going to
already
be
out.
Oh, it's already out.
You can buy it now. I actually have a copy.
Ooh. I'll have to find out if the recipes are any good. But it's a cookbook that features over 50 recipes from popular webcomic creators, and they never asked me, showcasing a variety of artistic and culinary delights. Each page has a full-page custom-created comic along with a favorite recipe that they have. You know, whether it be from alien cupcakes to Alamo queso to Chicago-style deep-dish pizza to Oreo truffles, it's going through it. And, even better, if you purchase the cookbook from a local merchant, some of that money goes to help the local food banks in your town.
Yep.
So, webcomic creators,
go check it out.
Yep. But let's take a moment on that since you have the cookbook, Alex. How are the recipes in that thing?
I haven't had time to try any of them yet, but there are several that I would like to. It was just fun going through once and just reading all the comics associated with them, too. So, there's a really good recipe for eggnog that I really want to try from Laura Innes, who does The Dreamer.
That is definitely the season for it.
Mm-hmm.
But,
we should probably point out, too, that this whole webcomics cookbook was spearheaded by our friend over at TGT Webcomics, Kurt Sasso.
Give a shout out over to them. And you can find out more about this over at webcomiccookbook.org. Not .com, but .org. And on that note, let's take a little bit of a moment to make our own money. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is The Fump.
But Bodkin, you're my wingman. If anyone can hook me up, you can. You gotta help me, Bodkin, help me get around.
Crayola's all that I know. The color's delicious, making a rainbow. Crayola, I love you so.
Thank you, Gilligan. Thank you, Skipper. Thank you, Thurston, Lovey-ho. Thank you, Mom.
Walking silly once again.
Said go! If you're wondering if I'm stalking you,
I'm stalking you,
I'm stalking you.
That's the Funny Music Project at thefump.com. thefump.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomics Newscast. This is Thomas Revor from 910 Comics, 910cmx.com, back with my co-hosts, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
And Eric Kimball.
Hello, Internet. Glad to see you're still there.
Hey, give Congress time. Give Congress time.
We'll take care of that pesky Internet problem for you. Yeah.
They're working hard on that.
They're trying to clear out all those tubes. Over in the print comics world, which blends over to our webcomics, is there has been the big stories recently about DC and Marvel doing same date and time, date of release on their digital comics as their print comics. But they are charging more for the digital comics. Well, third party, Dark Horse Comics, has decided to do something similar. They are going to be doing day and date release as well, but they are going to be charging less for the digital comics than they are for the print comics. This has had a bit of a backlash, as to be expected, as comic shops Jetpack Comics over in New Hampshire and Larry's Comics over in Massachusetts have decided to stop stocking Dark Horse Comics completely. If you want any of their stuff, such as Buffy Season 9 or some of the Star Wars comics or Hellboy, you have to place a special order with them to get it. And there's been big talk about it from creators as well, on both sides of the issue, both who are for and against this. Alex, let's go ahead and pick on you again. You said in the break that you've missed a lot of this, but we've talked about the pricing discrepancy between the print and the digital comics over with DC and Marvel. What do you think about Dark Horse doing day and date and discount for the digital?
I don't know. I'm kind of in favor of anything that doesn't try to baby the comic retailers myself and try to just completely subsidize them. But I can, you know, I can honestly understand the retailer's response to this. And it's a really sort of, it's a tough issue. It's a tough nut to crack. And like one of the response blog posts in this whole thing is that everybody's just trying to do the best they can and nobody really knows what the answer is yet. And, you know, someone has to bleed in order for everyone else to not bleed as much and survive and whatnot. And so I don't know. I think the comic book shops are going to have to fall at some point.
Eric, I mean, do you think that the comic shop is going to go the way of the buggy whip?
Yeah, well, you've read my rant below, but yeah. yeah, I mean, this is the comic book. I have friends who have comic book shops. I have nothing against comic book shops in general, but the business model is dead. You don't see newsstands anymore on every corner. Newsstands used to be a big thing. They're no longer there. Comic book shops are yet again another. I mean, we've seen time and again certain specialty shops, when the business moves, they die. And it's unfortunately, this is it. I mean, we are now reaching the point where it's at the end for them. I think they're gone.
It seems like Marvel is trying to prop them up a little bit more, because if you order a digital comic through their app, Marvel Comics will email you a coupon to use at the local comic shop. Now, this doesn't seem like much, except for that the webcomic, the digital version of their comics that they have, is going to cost about 99 cents. But they will email you a $5 coupon. That seems like a heck of a loss leader for even Marvel and Disney. Eric?
That's got to catch up to them at some point.
Yeah, I mean, yet again, here's the problem is that these companies, for the time being, are married to the comic book shops. It's their only distribution center. And so if you kick them off, the comic book shops have the ability to say, we're not going to stock your book. However, and the price they are demanding is that you sell your book at a ridiculous price online, or you give huge discounts to comic book shops. That cripples your business. And so it's one of these things where you got to stop. I mean, the comic book shops have to stop being babied. It's unfortunate, but they have to find some way to survive on their own, and comic book makers cannot continue to support them.
And I agree with that in part, because a lot of the comic book shops I've been going into recently have done what a lot of stores need to do nowadays, and that's diversify. I mean, it's not just comic books and that's it. You know, the days of that, they've been gone for a long time. There's a lot of other merchandise in there, science fiction, fantasy, even comic book merchandise, which people can get. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that I went into the local comic shop here, and I was surprised to see a plush Homestar runner. And I mean, of course, that isn't not a comic book. That's all on web. So, yeah, I think that we're not going to see the end of the comic shops, especially the larger change cause of that diversification. But I do think that the mom-and-pop shops, like for a lot of things, are going to be going by the wayside.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of comic book shops have been very resistant to diversification. I mean, back when I was printing books wholesale, I mean, I would call up and I'd say to a shop and say, hey, I have an independent comic. Are you interested in carrying it? They didn't even hear what it was. Independent, it was like, nope, sorry, we don't do that. You have to go through Diamond. And, you know, it's now they have to diversify, but they've been turning their backs on other sources for a while now.
Yeah. And if nothing else, I mean, the great thing about this is that we may be seeing the downfall of Diamond Distribution and their monopoly. So,
It's a terrible, abusive, codependent relationship.
Yes.
Comic book shops are having trouble and may die. I can see no way that Diamond can survive. I absolutely see no possible way this company can continue to exist. I mean, maybe a smarter businessman than I can figure out a company whose only purpose is to move books from a company to a shop.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, Diamond isn't just comic books either, or magazines. They do have a lot of the other merchandise as well. But we're going to be seeing a lot of people going around Diamond because Diamond has earned their bad reputation and for the way they deal with things.
Even if they had a stellar reputation, why? What is the justification for them?
Well, if they've got a stellar reputation, that means that they are dealing fairly with the with their retailers, because they are a wholesaler, period.
Okay.
But if you're a wholesaler who is doing your retailers wrong, they will look to other sources. Yeah. And with comic books, they had the monopoly. But in the merchandise, I mean, you can go to someplace else and go directly to Hasbro and get Transformers stuff, or
I mean,
Disney directly.
To these big companies to get things these days. And if we're seeing more and more popular comics coming from other spheres, from the independents, from web comics, that Diamond refuses to deal with, why should Diamond exist? I mean, I mean, not to be cruel here, but is there any rationale for it?
Exactly. If the print medium is going to be going, then Diamond will be going with it. You know, it's definitely tied together.
All right.
Okay. Next up, we've been hearing over from Keenspot about Marry Me and whatever their vampire comic is over there from the Crosby Brothers, about becoming a movie for the longest time. I mean, I remember it from about 4 or 5 years ago, them announcing that at Comic-Con. Well, it looks like something similar is going to be happening. From our friend Crazy Crow over at Krakow Studios, one of their more popular webcomics is Spinneret. And they've got a link on there for a fan-created Spinneret movie, which is linked over at YouTube. Both a creating of and a trailer, so to speak, of it. I've seen it, and more power to them. I hope it's successful.
That is the kind
it looks
of
like thing. They're having fun making it, though.
Exactly. And, I mean, they had, it wasn't just, oh, we're going to do this. They contacted Crazy Crow and got his permission. He said, oh, go for it.
It looks to be a young film student who thought this was a cool idea. He's got a promo up. He's asking for money and support. And, you know, it's cheesy. They are clearly having a lot of fun with it. But
you say it's cheesy, but I mean, you can't exactly call the Spinneret comic itself. You cannot say that isn't cheesy.
Yeah, Spinneret has no fetish left behind. But I think, honestly, while I do think it's cool that a film student decided to make a movie from a webcomic, Spinneret's not the best choice. You need that. You would need a lot of special effects to do a film about a six-armed woman, right? And it's clear they don't have the budget. They're asking for money, but I think they're depending on the popularity of Spinneret to generate the money for the film. But I don't think they're going to get enough.
Oh, you're just sore because they're not doing Xer in the movie.
No, that's not the reason. I think it's a lot of fun, but I think this is not the big breakthrough into movies for webcomics that we're hoping for yet.
And I agree with that, but I also, to me, I love seeing the fan participation that we're getting. I mean, as I have with my own webcomics, I love getting fan art. I love seeing fanfic within reason. Yeah, back to the bow chicka wow wow. I don't want that phrase ever used in fanfic of my comics, unless I write it.
No slash.
Yeah. But I mean, this is taking it one step more. This is doing with permission, and I highly strengthen that. Doing something which most people wouldn't even have thought of. I mean, that's making a little, at the very least, a fan-made movie, no matter how bad it is or good it is. But it's showing a love for the creation that, you know, Crazy Crowd's got to be going squealing with glee over there. Somebody's making a movie about my stuff. Yay!
Yeah. I certainly would be.
The thing is, I mean, in all seriousness, Alex's Guide would make a much better independent movie than Spinner. I mean, I wish that there would the independent makers would get these slice of life comics where people are just sort of standing around making wisecracks, because that's something you could do well as an independent movie. That's something that could actually come off and look really good and get noticed. And I kind of wish that they would take notice of things. I mean, like, you know, questionable content or something like that, which is so grounded that you could do it without having to spend millions of dollars in special effects.
A couple years ago, I did see a short film that some fans did of Something Positive.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was going to say,
probably find it. I think it's about like 25 minutes long, but I thought they did a pretty good job. I don't remember if they like got permission from Randy or not beforehand, but he, you know, I believe I saw him respond saying he thought it was okay, and I thought
cute. I think they didn't get permission from Randy ahead of time because it is impossible to get in contact.
That's probably also true. But yeah, you should search for the Something Positive movie. It's I think it's on, when I watched it was on Google Video, so it's probably still there.
Yep. Next up, we're going to see Eric Kimball following Jenny Breeden around with a video camera. Who is this weird guy and why is he following me?
Yeah, well, yeah, Jenny Breeden doesn't
and
even
she
need
would
to
get
have...
a month of comics out of it.
Absolutely. On to the downside of some of the webcomic business, PayPal is in the news again because of the Secret Santa campaign. Apparently, over at Regretsy, that's regretsy.com, they set up a Secret Santa campaign where you could send them money through PayPal and they would distribute this, which is fine, but according to PayPal, they use the Donate Now button, which is a wrong thing to do if you're not an actual charity.
Yeah.
So they have gone through and they initially froze the funds, refunded all of the money, minus fees, of course.
Of course.
And locked down the account. Now, I see that PayPal has gone through and they've taken the money back from the people who they refunded it from. And they've opened up the account for Regretsy to release those funds. But I can't see how this can be anything bad, anything but bad for PayPal. I mean, over the use of a donate button?
Well, here's the thing. PayPal, Amazon, a few other companies are so big now, they can do whatever they choose. And you just want to stay out of their way. And this is something that people should be aware of. When you put a donate now button on your comic, you are breaking PayPal's service agreement. Because your comic is not a nonprofit, and that is only available to nonprofits, and PayPal has the right to freeze your PayPal account if you use it. There are lots of comics that use the donate now button. So it's something you
have to be aware of. This could be a real issue for a lot of people.
Yet again, it's one of these things that PayPal only came down on Regretzi because it was so big and had so many transactions. But still, it's this. If this is PayPal's new thing that they're going after, it could be really bad for a lot of people.
So don't use PayPal's donate now button. Make your own buttons, folks.
Buy now button.
Buy now is the commercial button, which is the one you're illegally allowed to use under PayPal's agreement.
And I mean, it really is. I mean, I say that what I said half in jest because it doesn't take that much to make your own buttons. Give yourself a little bit of style and individuality rather than just using the same look that everybody else does.
Well, the donate now button is nice because it has an open end to it. And you do have to put a little work.
Yeah, you can let people fill in their amount.
You can still do that. I mean, back when with the watch, when we set up our donation animations, I mean, we went through and it was something there and we had our own text there and you could still go through and do everything else that you want to do on the back end. PayPal's API isn't that difficult.
Yes. If you are the type of person who knows anything about programming, there are plenty of web cartoonists who know nothing about programming. And that would be they've barely gotten their WordPress site running, and this would be very intimidating to them to attack. So.
And while we're in the realm of webcomic business, we've got a story here that says that Eric should have been extremely successful with his comics.
Now, wait a minute.
For people who don't know what we're saying, there's an article talking that startup entrepreneurs are, quote, arrogant and psychopathic. Yeah. Well, I don't know if Eric is arrogant.
Only but, three I mean, bodies on, not make you a psychopath.
No, that makes you a serial killer.
Yeah, there you go. Get your terms correct. Doesn't say serial killers do better in startup businesses.
But I mean, it does talk about the common features that a lot of successful startup companies have. And I, first of all, this is from an interview in Germany's Der Spiegel. Okay, I'm coming from someone who is of German heritage. I mean, you talk about arrogant in Germany. I mean, that right there is a bad combination. But it does give a lot of insight into some of the people and some of the traits that you need to be a successful businessman, period. You have to have a bit of arrogance, otherwise you wouldn't be starting a business in the first place. As for psychopathic, I think that's the wrong term. I mean, maybe narcissistic, maybe flexible morals would be more apt.
Well,
I mean, you don't become successful as successful like Donald Trump does because you're a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That is correct.
So it does give. I mean, I'm not saying that this is the way to go, or if you want to be a successful businessman, you've got to be a complete jackass. But you do have to have some tendencies.
But it doesn't hurt.
You have to be able to put some things aside. You have to put the nice guy aside at times because somebody's going to get hurt. That's the way of business.
Also, keep in mind when you're doing business with successful startups, there's a good chance that they are a complete jackass and that's how they got there. And keep that in mind because they're not going to give you the benefit of the doubt, or they're not going to, you know, see things through your way. They are going to fight to win, and you've got to be prepared for that.
One of my personal favorite movies, was the movie Pirates of Silicon Valley, talking about the starting of Microsoft and Apple computers. And it gives a great insight into the personalities of Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, Bill Gates, and Steve Ballmer. You know, three out of the four are, well, I would definitely go in the psychopathic route. And the one who was the nice guy, Steve Wozniak, is no longer in that type of business. Yeah, you have to have a little bit of the arrogance. You have to have, well, a lot of the arrogance. And for us people in webcomics, I mean, no matter how nice you are, you have to have a little bit of arrogance to say, this is my stuff, look at it.
Of course, now Steve Jobs is dead. Ha!
Okay.
Yeah, but fortunately they have him backed up somewhere.
He's on a hard drive waiting for his mechanical robot body.
And I, for one, will welcome our robotic overlords.
I'm not sure I'm going to work on robotic overlords in black turtlenecks. I think that's where I call them.
Oh, you ought to see the story, the story behind the black turtlenecks. Line. That's hilarious.
I'm sorry. I'm all down with Skynet and all, but if it's got black, if it's got Steve Jobs' outfit, no, I can't take that seriously.
Well, I mean, you know there's always going to be that one more thing, so. But that brings us close to the end. Let's go ahead and talk about some of our tailing things here. Go ahead and make sure to stop over at our website over at Alex?
Webcomic, newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
Alex, your voice changed.
I just hit puberty.
Now all we need is for Eric to do that. I've read your webcomics. And take a look, stop over there, take a look at the show notes, get a look at some of the great tutorial links that we have over there, such as how to do some of the skin shading, how to actually draw hands, which is probably the second most difficult thing I've heard artists say is to draw. How to do eyes, how to do painting in Photoshop, how to determine when it's time to redesign your site. Very good article over there. And many other stories, including, good Lord, 1, 2, 3, 4, almost 5 pages of Eric's rant. We could make a whole show just out of Eric's rant. Well, we could make a whole series out of Eric's rant on this one.
It's true. I am actually going to take my leave now, gentlemen.
Well, just in time, because let's go ahead and call this show to a wrap. And I want to thank you, Alex Heberling from alexsguide.net.
Toodaloo.
Eric Kimball from bladebunny.com.
Thank you much.
And of course, I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics, 910CMX.com, and we will see you in the funny papers.